Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Monday morning, and that means later on my dad calls in to tell a joke. Jokey time. And we got the Monday morning movie reviews coming up. Right now we're going to be doing that. But Jim Leskowski is going to join me to review all the new movies. Colin and Eric are going to be here. Colin Suter and Eric Childress, they join me every week from eFilmCritic.com. And from RogerEbert.com and more. And from the Chicago Critics Film Festival. The Chicago Film Critic Association puts together a festival. This is the 4th annual festival, and it just got underway this weekend. So it's been a really busy weekend for Colin and Eric, and it's going to continue to be a very busy week because the fest runs through Thursday at the Music Box Theater. And they've got a ton of stuff that they've been doing, and they're probably on, like, zero sleep and spending, you know, 24 hours a day at the beautiful Music Box Theater. So we want to get an update to kick off the segment. We want to get an update from Colin and Eric about how the weekend went at the Chicago Critic Film Festival and about what's coming up. But first, let's say hello to Jim. Jim, thanks for filling in for him this morning.
Oh, anytime, man. It's a pleasure to fill in. Always a good time.
All right, and we'll review all the new movies coming up. But let's welcome Colin and Eric to the show. Colin, welcome.
Hello there.
And Eric, welcome.
Hello.
All right. Well, Eric, tell everybody about the Chicago Critic Film Festival and give us a rundown on how it went this weekend.
Well, we had a really nice weekend. Really consistent viewership throughout the weekend. We continue. The one thing we have besides great movies are great guests, and we just sort of continued this weekend with, like, just really having some really special people being there, and just couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been, you know, more friendly to the guest and to us. Craig Robinson was there Friday night, kicked things off. Everyone really, really liked Morris from America. We got a lot of really positive response on that film. Mm-hmm. That Michael Pena was here Saturday night with War on Everyone.
Yeah, you know, I've had him on the show twice. He's unbelievable, actually.
He couldn't be super nice, tells great stories, very, very, very open about everything he does. He's a really funny guy. Just absolutely terrific.
Yeah, no, he's a very funny guy, and he also loved the fact that I just kept bringing up Felicity. Like, when I interviewed him, I just kept bringing up Felicity, and he was happy with that because he loved being on Felicity. But
it was something he didn't bring up.
Well, anyway, so you had great guests
Great guests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we got a full plate. You know, we still got 3 days, and it seems like we've been there for like 3 weeks.
Yeah,
pretty much this weekend. And coming up, we have Ty West is going to be there Wednesday night with In a Valley of Violence. Closing night, Dylan Galula is going to be there with this great movie called First Girl I Loved, and that's just the first of a great double feature closing night. Operator, which was shot in the Andersonville area and features the neo-futurist. Martin Starr and Logan Kybens and Sharon Green are going to be there. So that's going to be really special. And then Monday night, I cannot wait for tonight, actually, because there's this really beautiful movie called American Fable. And the director and the producer and the 11-year-old star Peyton Kennedy are going to be there. That's going to just be an amazing evening at the Music Box.
Very cool. All right. And Colin, your first shorts program was this weekend. You got another one coming up during the week, correct?
Yeah, we had one this weekend in the afternoon on Saturday at 1 o'clock. That was really terrific. Had some guests for it. Some writers and directors and a cinematographer from Mexico came in. And then today is the second program, and it's at 5:30 before American Fable. And it's very, again, a very eclectic mix. I always mix things up with, a couple documentaries, a couple animated films, some straightforward live action narratives, some experimental stuff. So everything's just kind of thrown into a blender, and it's fun. It's like making my own mixtape and getting to, share it with people. Mm. So, so people should definitely come on out, especially if they're, art majors. I got a 36-minute documentary about this amazing woman who does these unbelievably intricate and detailed pencil drawings that are just mind-boggling. And Terry Gilliam is in this thing too, which kind of shows gives you an idea of what her imagination is like if he is in the film offering his two cents on her.
Yeah.
And it's a movie called Love Bite. And that's kind of the centerpiece of today's shorts program. And it's a thing. I just, her drawings are so amazing. I can't wait to see them blown up on a big screen like the Music Box. Like, that's how amazing these things are. Mm. And then, you know, I got a documentary in there called Killer, and I'm anxious to hear. I mean, not a documentary, it's a narrative. Straightforward narrative, sort of dark comedy in the tradition of, you know, Todd Solondz.
Yeah, I read about this one, Colin.
Yeah. I cannot wait to hear the audience reaction at the end of this film. It's going to be quite amazing, or just unbelievable. This is a good day to come out. I mean, every day is a good day to come out, but, you know, between these two things. And we got a repeat of a film that played tonight called Hunt for the Wilder People with Stan Meehl, and it's from the director of What We Do in the Shadows. And I saw this thing today when we screened it at 6 o'clock today. Audience was laughing from beginning to end, and I'm not exaggerating. This is one of the best films, definitely one of the best comedies of the year. And so we're giving that an encore presentation at 3 o'clock today. And, you know, if you can make it, you got to come see this film. It is terrific.
Okay.
Monday's a good day.
All right. And obviously we can still get tickets, Eric, at Chicago Critics Film Fest.
Yeah, ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. Tickets are available throughout the entire week. Hopefully recommend some of these movies. And we are playing some encores during the afternoon at the Music Box this week, like Colin just mentioned. And I know, you know, the great thing about this festival, beyond, you know, just, you know, being a part of it and being able to program our own festival and things like that, is that we're doing it, we're almost doing it as much for us as we are for, you know, for the audience, because like Colin said, he had not seen Hunt for the Wilder People. He didn't, you know, get to see it at Sundance or South by Southwest, and he saw it here. And so we get to see the movies that, you know, the rest of the programming team recommends. And Colin and I saw a movie today that, unfortunately, we're not playing again at the festival, but it's a film that's coming out this summer that I want to put on everyone's radar immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I've teased it before, but I hadn't seen it, and we finally saw it today. And it's a movie called Life Animated.
Okay.
And the story, it's a documentary. It's a true story about a autistic man who is Owen Suskind. And as a child, his parents discovered that he developed autism. And in the midst of figuring out what they were going to do, how they were going to handle this situation, they discovered that their son, while watching Disney animated films, began to communicate with them through the dialogue of the films.
Hmm.
And I haven't openly wept at a movie as hard as I did during this film.
Wow.
In a great way, not out of sadness. There was completely out of tears of joy throughout this entire film. And it's this beautiful film about how the power of movies and the power of movies to reflect our own lives and insecurities and fears and joy, and how we use those in our everyday life. So it's not like, you know, it's seeing this autistic man, through this autistic boy and his man, as he basically comes to terms with becoming a man and living by himself for the first time. And it takes you through this entire journey. And I cannot say anything more about this film, about how great it is.
Yeah.
And, Colin, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I echo everything Eric said. I just sat there today going, man, we really need to get this in front of a bigger audience, or, you know. But luckily, you know, we will have that audience when it comes out later this summer. It's this year's, we had a movie last year called That Kid Begins that we were kind of saying the same thing about in terms of, you know, tears of joy. And this is that film. This is a movie that, you know, relies on word of mouth for people to go see it. So we're trying to get that started right now.
Okay. So it played the festival on Sunday. It's called Life Animated, and it's going to get a regular release. People will get to see it, and you guys want to get the word out on this one. Life Animated will be coming out later in the summer. All right, well, listen, guys, get some rest.
Thank you. What's that?
Jim and I are going to review the movies that came out this week, and then we'll get back to you guys next week. I'm off next Monday morning for Memorial Day, but we can do it on the Tuesday morning then, and we'll get a full summation of how the awards the film festival went, and then we'll review the new movies that came out. All right.
Great.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right.
All right. Okay, there's Colin and Eric are they're going to get some rest. Jim, you hang on.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, Jim's going to hang on. When we come back, we'll review all the new movies. And again, ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com for further information and tickets and schedules. It's also at MusicBoxTheater.com as well. And it continues through Thursday. And Colin and Eric will be living at the Music Box Theater for the next, few days. All right, make sure you go out there and support this stuff. All right, we'll take a quick break, and the Monday morning movie reviews will officially begin with me and Jim handling all the new releases. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We got a break for news here. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 a.m. It is time to review the new movies. Colin and Eric are off to bed because they have to get up in just a few hours to head to the Music Box Theater, and they're going to be there all week long hosting and introducing movies for the Chicago Critics Film Festival. Go check it out. They put a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of work into this and picking some really great movies that you'll get a chance to see first. So anyway, one more time, musicboxtheater.com and chicagocriticsfilmfestival.com. All right, Jim Laskowski is filling in for Eric and Colin, and we're going to review the new movies. Jim, first of all, tell everybody about the podcast network that you have. I appeared on your podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, of course. You did a fantastic job as a guest for Directors Club, in which we reviewed about half of the filmography of legendary Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, we were together for about 2 hours, and we only got the Goodfellas. That's as far as we got, because, it's Scorsese. What are you going to do,
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to just cover everything in that span of time.
Yeah, and by the way, we have a direct link on our Facebook page to that podcast if people want to listen to it. It's Jim and I discussing Martin Scorsese, and it was a lot of fun. It was really cool, and we're going to do part two at some point in the future. But there's a link on our Facebook page directly to that podcast for the Directors Club. If you just go to facebook.com/NickDShow, you can check it out there. But go ahead and tell everybody about the other podcasts that you do as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, people can check out NowPlayingNetwork.net to download or stream that episode, along with many other great podcasts, like Vinyl Emergency, of course, from Jim Hanke, which is a music interview-based show, Movie Madness from the one and only Eric Childress, who you just heard from, and the newest addition to the network is Supporting Characters by Bill Ackerman. He interviews a lot of behind-the-scenes film historians and journalists and authors, and these are people who aren't necessarily household names, but they are every bit as interesting to listen to their stories and hear about their passion for film. So it's a must-hear for film fanatics, so I highly recommend people check out Supporting Characters as well over at NowPlayingNetwork.net.
Okay, check it out, NowPlayingNetwork.net, and if you're specifically interested in the Scorsese podcast Directors Club that Jim and I did, and it's available right now, and we have a link to it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay, we got some movies to talk about.
Indeed.
Jim, why don't you start off with the Angry Birds movie, which I did not get a chance to see, and I've never played the game. I don't have the app, so I looked at the list of the voice credits on this. Are incredible. I mean, there's like a ton of really talented, awesome people. Some of my favorite and funniest people are part of this. So tell everybody about the Angry Birds movie.
Sure. Well, we've had many movies adapted from video games, but now we have a movie that's, inspired by the popular app, but, of course, it's also a game. And, it's quite addictive for a lot of people of all ages. I'll admit that I played it for a short while and then kind of realized that my time was best served elsewhere. And I had the same feeling sitting through this movie. And in the world of this, All birds are, of course, flightless. And the plot focuses on Red, the titular angry bird who is ordered to anger management therapy. And there he meets a couple of new friends, Chuck, the speedy complainer, who's like Speedy Gonzalez, essentially, and a big guy by the name of Bomb, who just explodes when he gets angry. So, yeah, you get introduced to these, quirky birds, and, you know, of course there has to be some conflict, and that comes in the form of these green pig dignitaries. Their habitat is first visited by these pigs and then sort of overrun, and Red is convinced that they're scheming and doing something that's up to no good. So the other birds really don't trust Red because he's just kind of a troublemaker, but so they don't believe him. And then eventually all the eggs on the bird island are stolen by the pigs, and it's up to Red to get these eggs back. It takes about an hour to finally get to the site of seeing birds being fired at pigs and destroying these rickety structures like in the game itself. For the first hour, it's all set up and it's all kind of ridiculous humor. And by the time we get to the sort of climax, or the last act, I should say, it tries to emulate the destruction that people enjoy playing on their phones. But by that point, I simply did not care at all. It feels like it was put together by committee. You know, I know you've talked in the past about how pop stars may have been created by guys in suits sitting in boardrooms.
Right.
I kind of imagine that's how this got greenlit. Just someone had this idea of like turning a popular app into a kid's movie in hopes of cashing in. And this movie just serves up everything audiences are probably sick of by now. It's just got these celebrity voices delivering very stale jokes and pop culture references and ridiculous slapstick. You know, the kind of humor here is just so eye-rolling. There's a moment where an eagle urinates into the Lake of Wisdom, and a character then replies with, "Well, I guess it's now the Lake of Wiz."
Yeah. That was a joke that they were actually advertising in the commercials. And I remember sitting at home watching the TV and the commercial came on, and this is a family movie where the main joke in the commercial was that a couple of birds drank urine and one is now dry heaving.
Pretty much.
And I was like, wait a minute, what is this? What is this? And you're advertising this as your like best joke?
Yeah, it's sad but true.
Yeah.
There is like a lot of toilet humor scattered throughout this movie, and I don't think I saw this in the audience, and the kids didn't seem to really get into this at all. So I think kids and parents deserve a lot better than this Angry Birds movie. Okay. It totally grated on my nerves, and I hope people skip it.
It made $39 million over the weekend. Which is not phenomenal, but it was enough to unseat Captain America as the number one movie in the country. So it did. I mean, $39 million is pretty solid. But some of the voice work here, you've got Sean Penn. Now, what does Sean Penn play in this?
I think he plays the eagle, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, he is. So you got Keegan-Michael Key, Kate McKinnon, Tony Hale, Hannibal Buress. You got Titus Burgess.
And Sudeikis plays the main bird.
Sudeikis, Josh Gad, Danny McBride, Maya Rudolph, Bill Hader, Peter Dinklage. It's a crazy group of very, very talented people here.
So did Shark Tale, remember. They had a great lineup of celebrity voices.
Including Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right, so the Angry Birds movie is a no.
Big no.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Now, the other box office thing that happened this week, I mean, we'll talk about Neighbors 2, which made almost $22 million over the weekend, which I'm just stunned and appalled by.
Mm-hmm.
But the first movie opened with $28 million or something to that regard.
Yeah, no, I think it was a minor hit.
It was a big hit. I'm not sure what the pace is for this one. And then Nice Guys made $11.2 million over the weekend as well. which is kind of disappointing considering, you know, the star power that's in there. You would think more people, I guess because it's rated R and it's kind of violent and adult in nature, maybe that's why it didn't make the kind of money that it should have made. Now, what did you see Captain America Civil War?
Yeah, I did. I did enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan of the Captain America series in general. So, yeah, no, it was very, very good.
Yeah, I thought it was great, too. And it's it obviously is doing, you know, phenomenal business. Made $33 million over the weekend, bringing its total up to almost $348 million just domestically. Worldwide, it's already at $1 billion.
So, wow.
Yeah. Anything, basically anything that has Disney on it is making money. You know, between that and Jungle Book, which is already up to $327 million just domestically. And Zootopia.
And you're going to have Finding Dory.
And yet Finding Dory is coming out in a couple of weeks. But Zootopia just won't die. It's still in the top 10. The thing came out the beginning of March. And it's still in the top 10. And
deservedly so,
because it's a terrific movie. But yeah, Disney making a ton of money. All right, we're going to break here, Jim. Hang on.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Jim Zelazkowski is filling in. Colin and Eric are getting much needed rest because they're smack dab in the middle of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which they are going to be a part of all week long at the Music Box Theater. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we got more movies to review right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, it is Monday. And that means my dad will be calling in a little bit later on to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. But it's also time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Colin and Eric are resting right now because they've been very, very busy this whole week and into the next week, this whole weekend and into next week with the Chicago Critics Film Festival. So we gave them a little bit of rest. They were just on with us for a couple of minutes, but they're fast asleep now, getting ready for more stuff at the film festival. And so Jim Laskowski, who filled in for Colin while he took a couple of months off at the beginning of the year, is with us, and we're reviewing the new movies. And you can check out Jim and his podcast network, NowPlayingNetwork.net, NowPlayingNetwork.net. And we welcome Jim back to the show. Hello, Jim.
Hello again.
All right, Jim, tell everybody about The Lobster.
Ooh, all right, The Lobster. Man, so this comes from Yorgos Lanthimos. He's a Greek director that brought an incredible movie called Dogtooth, which I found incredibly disturbing and darkly funny. And you can almost think of his style like if maybe Wes Anderson made movies like Michael Haneke. The latest from him, The Lobster here, opens on a woman shooting a donkey with a handgun while just this disconcerting, you know, score surrounds us. And then we move to a scene of a wife leaving her husband, David, played brilliantly by Colin Farrell, as she leaves him for another man, and David is carted off pretty much immediately to a rather strange hotel. And as it turns out, this hotel is a place for singles, and it's like a punitive resort where you have to find a match in 45 days, or you end up being turned into an animal of your choice. David wants to be a lobster for some reason, and if he fails to find somebody within 45 days, that's what he'll be turned into. And it's an unusual choice, but he's commended by the hotel manager there, who's pretty much in control of this whole situation. And then there's also another faction of individuals who choose to rebel against the hotel and their beliefs and their commandments, and they primarily live out in the woods, and they have to flee from hunters that come from the hotel. So eventually something occurs, and the second act we find that David meets a woman played by Rachel Weisz, and they have a connection, and he sort of joins these loners in the woods. So it's really a fascinating story in of itself, very unique. It's incredibly unpredictable. You don't know where this thing is going, but it's also a weird, weird movie that I find myself thinking about a lot. I think people should seek it out, but you have to be adventurous. This is not a conventional love story of any kind. It's kind of this strange, absurdist satire, and I found myself laughing and cringing. And I definitely was invested for the most part. But the second half kind of lost momentum, in my opinion, because the dynamics change and the hotel is more in the background than in the foreground. But I like the theme in which, you know, this idea that humans only count if they're with someone, and society sort of views older single people as kind of worrisome. So any kind of companionship is better than none. And I love, obviously, Colin Farrell's performance in this, and John C. Reilly shows up. Rachel Weisz is great. But I felt like it petered out just a little bit for me in the second half of this film. But there is a really funny moment involving dancing in the woods to no music that I found really funny and strange. And that's kind of how I feel about this whole movie. It's just really funny, really strange. It's more akin to, like, Monty Python or the TV show Louie, only it's even darker and more stilted at times. I really liked it. I just think I need to watch it again now that I know what I'm in for. But I'd say see this for what might be my favorite Colin Farrell performance to date.
Yeah, I thought it was great, and it is weird as hell. I mean,
yeah.
It's a very, very weird movie. I mean, just describing the plot, people are going to get that this is not your average, you know, sort of romantic comedy. But it is that. It is a romantic comedy because there's a lot of funny stuff in it. And it is a very romantic film. And it is a film about it is a film that really is about loneliness and being on your own. It has a very interesting take. This filmmaker is, got a very, very strange and original style. Now, some people might, you know, be tempted to compare him to, say, Charlie Kaufman.
For this movie.
Yeah. I can see that. I don't know. I find this movie, you know, pretty profound and very interesting in the ways that I really love the best of stuff that Charlie Kaufman does. But I think this guy's a singular voice. I don't want to it feels weird to compare him to other filmmakers just because he's got a weird style and a weird point of view. It doesn't make him exactly, you know, like, oh, he falls into the Charlie Kaufman category. I can see that, but that's the easiest way for me to describe how weird this vision is. I think Rachel Weisz is tremendous in this movie. John C. Reilly, very funny in it. The whole setup of the hotel and the way it's brought out is really interesting and very unique. But as you mentioned, Jim, the soul of this movie is Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell is tremendous in this movie. As you know, I'm a huge Colin Farrell fan. I always have been. This might be, and I think you're right in this, this might be the best performance he's ever given. He's very vulnerable in it. It's weird. It's funny. Just the choices that he makes, from the way that he looks to how he's dressed, you know, the physical choices that he makes in the movie are really, really fascinating. I agree with you. I think the second half's not as strong as the first half. I think mainly because the setup and the idea of the movie is so incredibly, like, astonishingly original that when it becomes, you know, a little bit more standard in the second half of the movie. It's almost impossible for this guy to set up this idea and follow through completely and offer new surprises through an entire 2-hour running time. It did peters out a little bit, but not enough for, you know, for anybody to not recommend it. And again, as Jim said, this is a weird one. This is a very, very weird movie. Don't say that we didn't warn you that it's way out there and it's weird. And if you see it and you hate it because it's weird, don't say we didn't warn you. So don't send me emails and don't, you know, post on my Facebook page. What the hell is wrong with you? Why would you recommend this movie? It is for someone who wants to be a little adventurous and see something way out there and very, very strange. But I was emotionally moved by it. And again, I think it's a very romantic movie, but a movie that really knows loneliness, a movie that is about, you know, embracing being alone. It is only playing at the River East here, downtown Chicago. It's also at the Landmark Century Center Cinema on Clark and Diversey, and it's also in Evanston at the Century. And I highly recommend it. I think it's terrific. And once again, I can't say enough about how great Colin Farrell is. Always love the guy. Even when he's in bad movies, I like him. And he's been in some bad movies.
Yeah, you know, I have I have to recommend the Nerdist podcast that Chris Hardwick hosts. He just did an incredible interview with Colin Farrell, and they talked about this movie for a good 10 or 15 minutes. And he is so good as a guest on a podcast. But at one point, he showed the lobster to some of his friends, and his friends were like, "When are you going to star in SWAT 2?"
That's funny. All right, Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay, man.
All right, Jim Leskowski is with us. We reviewed a couple of movies. The Angry Birds movie, Jim saw on his own, didn't like it, not recommending it. And The Lobster, we both saw, we both recommend. It is weird. It's very, 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 very weird. Don't say we didn't warn you, but I think really gratifying and moving and funny, and I liked it a lot. Okay, we're going to take a break. We got a couple more movies to talk about, and then I'll give you some more box office figures coming up right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m., that's when Steve Grzanich comes in with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. I'm your overnight dude, and here we go, 2 to 5 a.m. on weekday mornings. It's Monday. That means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, 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 jokey time. Monday also means we review the new movies. Colin Suter and Eric Childress, who join me every week, are taking a little rest this morning. They are right smack dab in the middle of hosting and running, essentially, the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is happening all week at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets and get your schedule at ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com or MusicBoxTheater.com. So they took a week off. They stopped in for a second to tell us a little bit about how the weekend has gone so far and how the film festival will continue. So Jim Leskowski is with us from NowPlayingNetwork.net, and we're reviewing the new movies. Jim, welcome back.
Hi there.
All right. Jim, tell us about Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising.
Oh, boy. So, you know, I have to start out by saying that on my Facebook news feed, this movie was being praised to the high heavens from a lot of critics. In fact, IndieWire has said that they believe that this is one of the best comedy sequels ever made.
I saw the review you sent me. You sent me the review, and I was stunned.
So I walked into this thinking, maybe this won't be so bad. But it picks up a few years after its predecessor left off, which I thought was fine. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But we have the returning characters, Mac and Kelly. Mac played by Seth Rogen, and Kelly played by an always welcome Rose Byrne. So they're in the beginning of this film, they're preparing to sell their home, and this comes with a total misunderstanding of the concept of escrow. And you know, once they realize, well, we got to kind of keep things, you know, on the down low and keep things cool here for whenever potential buyers are around, they of course have to have a conflict with the neighbors next door once again. They become very tense about the potential for unannounced visits by prospective buyers, like I mentioned, since they've already signed on for another home. But what happens, of course, is a sorority moves in next door, headed by Chloe Grace Moretz, and they instantly become terrified. And that's even before the sorority's unofficial advisor shows up, their former nemesis, Teddy, played by Zac Efron. And, of course, once they all get together, wacky hijinks ensue, including a similar rivalry that we had in the first film, only this time it's a bunch of mean girls instead of mean frat guys. Now, Neighbors 2 is interested in the idea of young women discovering a sexist, unfair world rather than the young women themselves portrayed as real human beings. I don't think these sorority girls are well-defined at all, even if the film thinks they are or some other reviews think they are. There's, you know, an early scene where Chloe Grace Moretz and her friends attend a frat party, and they're confronted with, like, all these disgusting girl-thirsty jackasses who, you know, populated the original Neighbors. And I thought that was an interesting start, like a little reversal of the first film. But The argument I've just talked about is that this film is trying to say something about the perception of women in college and how they're treated. But the problem is that this movie is focused on being crass and gross and nasty. And then, you know, it at times, especially towards the end, tries to be sweet and sincere, and it just rings completely false because the screenplay treats everybody like cartoons. And I want to say that this was one of the worst edited comedies I've seen. There's one overextended joke involving a miscommunication via text that goes on forever. The opening credits felt lazy. The opening scene was just disgusting. Chloe Moretz was just wasted, literally. And as an actress, the cameos don't work. The only time I laughed was at Zac Efron and an attempt to break out of a garage. But other than that, I thought this was pure garbage, and I cannot believe people are giving this a pass. I thought it was torture to sit through. I will say it's a smidge better than Dirty Grandpa, but I'd put them in the same league as far as I'm concerned. I thought this was a terrible sequel, so this is a huge thumbs down.
Yeah, I hated every frame of this movie. And in my opinion, you mentioned how poorly edited it is. Everything about this movie is poorly done. It barely even qualifies as a movie. There are scenes in this movie that just make no sense, and it seemed to be put together in some random order. At one point, it's already established. This is unbelievably bad this film is, and poorly put together. At one point, Zac Efron has already been established that he's living in the sorority house with them, and then about 7 minutes later, there's a scene where he's packing his stuff and leaving the house that he lives with Dave Franco.
Right.
And he's already living in the sorority. It's already been established he's living in the sorority. And that's just one of the many, many, many things that don't make sense. And the editing, as you mentioned, the editing is horrendous in this movie. I mean, it's just awful. There is no rhythm. There is no pacing. The jokes are as lame as you can possibly imagine. I did not laugh once in this movie. Not one time did I laugh. I smiled a little bit because Billy Eichner's in the movie, and he plays and Liz Kakowski, who I love. They play rival realtors in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only sort of like brightish moments. Abby Jacobson's in the movie for some unknown reason from Broad City. She's in it as the wife of the couple who wanted to buy. Completely wasted. One of the funniest women that's ever walked Earth. And they gave her nothing to do. And, you know, I always find it really interesting that because Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are Jewish, that they can get away with writing really offensive Jewish jokes.
I couldn't believe that moment, and there's a line during that moment that I could not believe.
Well, no, it's unbelievable. And I mean, they can get away with it. I mean, it's fine. You know, they can get away with it because they are Jewish. But
but
first of all, the jokes aren't funny. Second of all, it just reinforces every sort of terrible stereotype you could possibly have. It's just simply on the simplest of levels, it's not funny. And there's a line that Rogan has in the movie that I just found deplorable. It's one of those lines where you're supposed to groan and then laugh, but you never laugh. You just groan. There's not one likable person in this movie. This is the first movie that I've actively hated Chloe Grace Moretz in. And I love her. I love her. I think she's one of the most talented young actresses on the planet. But I thought she was terrible. There is a subplot involving Dave Franco getting married that makes no sense, that tries to say something about bros accepting homosexuals in a way that a lot of the stereotypical bros don't. And like you said, there's some half-ass attempt to discuss feminism and the image of women and how they're treated. But you can't have your cake and eat it, too. You can't have that kind of... You can't have that kind of misogynistic and gross and ridiculous humor and then say that you're making a point about it.
Right.
I hated everything about this movie. I hated everything about it. I didn't even smile right from the opening scene. Right at the beginning. I mean, because I hated the first movie. Hated the first movie. And at least in this one, I will say this, at least in this one, which I think is worse than the first one, they do actually talk about how bad they are as parents. In the first movie, it's completely ignored. We're supposed to root for these people, and they're the worst parents on the planet. Their idea is to go next door to the house. Long as they have a baby monitor on, they can get loaded and get high, and everything is okay, as long as they can hear through the baby monitor. And that goes on over and over and over again with no acknowledgement. At least in this movie, they attempt humor at acknowledging how terrible they are as parents. But it still doesn't alleviate the fact that these are incredibly unlikable people. Like, unbelievably unlikable, irresponsible morons who you would not want to even know. Zac Efron is the only character in the movie that has a mini arc.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
I He's the only character in the movie that has any kind of like through line. You know, everything else, he's the only character that kind of changes, but it's so poorly written, you know. And I'm still a fan of Zac Efron. I am.
Oh yeah, I think he's actually really talented.
I do too. But when he keeps making crap like this and the Dirty Grandpa, and I don't know if you saw the trailer for this We Need Dates for the Wedding movie.
Oh yeah,
which looks horrendous.
Yep.
He has clearly chosen a path that he's just going to go for the cheap stuff. Which is really too bad, because I think Zac Efron is really talented.
Right.
So, no, this is bad. On every conceivable level, it's horrendous. When your opening scene is someone throwing up into someone else's mouth, that's your opening. That's your opening scene. Oh, welcome to the movie. Somebody just puked in somebody's mouth. Enjoy. Enjoy the next 90 minutes. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And the fact that this thing is getting a pass, I read that IndieWire review. A woman reviewed it for The Trib, gave it 4 stars.
I know. What's going on?
I don't know, man. I don't know. This is one of the worst movies, if not the worst movie I've seen all year. It is unforgivably crap. All right, we got to take a break. Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to close on a high note. Because seriously, I saw Neighbors 2 before work here Friday morning, Dan, as you know. I was just beside myself when I came in.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, awful. All right. We do have a good movie to talk about, and we'll review that coming up after we take a break. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews continue. Colin and Eric are resting up for the continuation of the Chicago Critics Film Festival. So Jim Laskowski has been kind enough to join us. We got one more movie to review. Jim, tell us all about The Nice Guys.
Happily. We have here, surprise, surprise, a buddy cop action comedy from Shane Black.
Yeah.
He wrote the Lethal Weapon movies, Last Boy Scout, the great Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and the last and probably the best of the Iron Man films, Iron Man 3. So it follows in the tradition of the formula of, you know, a buddy cop action comedy, and it mixes in a little bit of The Big Lebowski and Inherent Vice. You know, despite not necessarily being quite as strong as those two examples of a Sam Spade or Raymond Chandler-esque mystery, it's still incredibly entertaining all around. Jackson Healy is played by Russell Crowe. He's sort of a tough guy fighter who beats up people for money, essentially. And Holland March is played by a never funnier Ryan Gosling. And he's kind of a con artist, but more of a PI, of course. He will lie at the drop of a hat, but he mostly has good intentions. Somehow these two team up to find a missing woman named Amelia who may or may not be linked to the murder of a porn star. And we eventually find out that all this ties somehow to a Justice Department official who happens to be the missing girl's mother, as well as a slew of nasty bad guys, including a hitman, Keith David, and a guy that looks like he could have been the sixth member of the Cars. It all culminates at an auto show where a mysterious film may or may not reveal vital information and corruption on a higher level. Along for the ride also is Holland's 13-year-old daughter, Holly, who is quite precocious and actively wants to play a part in solving the mystery of the missing girl. So, yeah, I really loved Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and this one is almost right up there too. Even if I felt it goes on a bit long, I still thought everything around was consistently entertaining. I thought the action sequences were well done, the dialogue was crisp and clever, and I thought the daughter is kind of a natural. I thought she had a really strong screen presence.
She's great.
That reminded me of like maybe a young Reese Witherspoon or something.
Yeah.
And she never comes across as obnoxious, which you kind of would expect from maybe a precocious 13-year-old.
Well, she's kind of the smartest person in the movie.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, you know, for me, also, the star of the show is Ryan Gosling, who throughout this movie made me laugh so hard and often that I pretty much want him to do comedy from here on out. It's similar to the way I felt about Mark Wahlberg after, like, I heard Huckabees and then the other guys. His timing here is just spot on, and his tumble down a hill might be like the best tumble down a hill since Dudley Moore in Blake Edwards 10.
Yeah.
So I just like there's also a classic reaction when Gosling discovers a rotting corpse. So both him and Russell Crowe have incredible chemistry, and I think that's why this is kind of a must-see. I think it should be making more money than it is right now. It's a really great screenplay. And like I said, Gosling and Crowe, you can't go wrong. They work some comedy gold out of maybe some predictable but very entertaining material. I had a great time watching this.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was great. It was very, very entertaining. I laughed from beginning to end. Crowe and Gosling are tremendous together. They've got really, really good timing. They've got great chemistry. And this girl, Angouri Rice, who plays Gosling's daughter, is she's a find, man. She's great in this movie. Shane Black has this tendency, and it's kind of his trademark, is to combine inappropriate comedy with violence. And that's on display here almost in every scene. There's a scene, there's a scene where Gosling ends up falling out of a window with another guy, and he lands in the pool, and something else happens to the other guy. I almost fell out of my chair laughing. Gosling is hysterical in this movie. Like, every choice that he makes is very funny. The scene with the dead body, where he discovers the dead body after getting loaded, swimming in a pool with mermaids, getting drunk, and then falling down this hill. When he discovers this body, he's doing Lou Costello. He's channeling Lou Costello from Abbott and Costello. Just think about when, you know, like Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein, you know, when, you know, Lou sees the Wolfman and tries to tell Bud that there's a Wolfman next to him and he can't speak. That's exactly what Gosling is doing. And the fact that Gosling was inspired to do a Lou Costello take in this movie is inspired. It's fantastic. Crowe is perfect for the role. There also is a quick cutaway early in this movie that involves Russell Crowe in a spit take where I almost peed my pants. I was laughing so hard. So Crowe, Gosling together, great. Snappy, smart, vulgar dialogue in situations that Shane Black is known to do. A nice little reunion between Kim Basinger and Russell Crowe in another L.A. movie. And I love this the girl. So I agree with you. I think it goes on a little bit too long. Could have been trimmed by 10-15 minutes. There's no denying the incredible entertainment value of this movie. It's rated R. It's violent. It's got nudity. It's got everything that you could want in an R-rated movie. But the chemistry between Crowe and Gosling is so funny, and particularly Ryan Gosling is hysterical in this movie. So
and it immediately makes me want to rewatch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang for the chemistry between Downey Jr. and Kilmer in that movie.
A great movie. Another great movie. I look forward, and I loved Iron Man 3. I think Shane Black does very, very funny stuff and very, very original stuff. So, and again, Ryan Gosling, phenomenally funny in it. Okay, Jim, thank you so much for filling in for us. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to come on your show. It's actually an honor for me, so thank you.
And I was really thrilled that you asked me to be on one of your podcasts, and you can check it out. We have a link on our Facebook page to the Directors Club podcast where Jim and I discuss Martin Scorsese. Jim, thanks again, man.
Okay, man.
Take care.
Be in touch. Thanks.
All right. See you later. There's Jim Liskowski. We'll take a break. When we come back after the news, I'll tell you about the box office. We'll talk a little bit about the box office and then get into some other stuff here on Monday morning. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us. Let me wrap up the box office real quick here, and then we'll jump into video game movies, whether there have been good ones or bad ones. 312-981-7200, talk and text on that. Number one movie in the country is the Angry Birds movie, $39 million it made over the weekend. Esmeralda, did you ever play Angry Birds?
I did.
Yeah.
Of course, like everyone.
Yeah, I never did, because I didn't have a phone that was capable of having an app until this year, so... Didn't have a phone that could actually handle Angry Birds app until September of just this past year. But I had friends who played it, you know, and people seemed to be kind of obsessed with it. Vic, did you ever play Angry Birds?
I did enjoy Angry Birds, but I'm a little ahead of you, but still behind everyone else. I didn't download the app until about a year after it came out.
Wow.
I thought it was great, though.
I just remember being in... the bar that I used to hang out at when I was a drinking man, and there would be like 7-8 people at the bar just playing it. They'd be just drinking and playing Angry Birds. Now, Dan, did you ever play the Angry Birds?
Yeah, I had the obsession for like 3 or 4 weeks, and then once like I passed through the first level, I think there's like 13 stories within the first level or whatever, and I got through those, and then I was like, okay, I better stop.
What is it about about this particular game that became so obsessive for people? I mean, because I saw it everywhere. I mean, I never did. What was it about it for you guys, Esmeralda? What was it about?
Those stupid pigs.
So there was just the stupid
pigs.
They
would laugh at you if you didn't knock them all down.
So the pigs would laugh if you didn't fly into one of their buildings and knock them all down.
Right. And I would get so mad. I'm like, that stupid pig laughing at me.
Dan, did you get mad when the pigs laughed?
Those bastards.
Now, I have to tell, Esmeralda, you have to tell everybody about this game that you are currently playing, that you are playing all the time. Every time And it's not, is it a game? What is it exactly?
So it is a game. You don't really, you can't really play it all the time. So it's called Neko Atsume. It's about a bunch of cats. So you have this space, and all just these cats show up, and the goal is you put things out for them, toys, like pillows and things that they sit on, their food. There's like varying food. There's like really fancy food or really cheap food. Uh-huh. And just depending on what you put out and type of food and stuff, they show up, all these different cats show
so
up and
do
hang
you
out.
Do you check back in and then go, oh, there's a cat in the room?
Yeah, like right now I'm looking at it and there's a few cats just kind of hanging around, sitting on things.
And that's it?
I mean,
so you just like do you have to take care of them and feed them?
Well, you feed them, but you never see them eating. So that's the thing. So you look at it for a little bit, change out some toys or something, and then you just go about your business.
And then go back and see what the cats are doing.
Right. And then maybe like an hour later you can go back and there was more cats. And then they give you gifts of fish.
The cats do.
Yes. And that's how you pay for stuff, was with this with the fish. Yeah. It's like collecting. It's kind of like that Pokemon thing where you're collecting cats and you take pictures of them.
Now, is it just because I think you were showing me that there's more than one room, right? You can go to different.
Yeah, there's all these different rooms that you can buy, like to redecorate.
You buy it with fish.
Yes.
So you buy a room with fish.
Yes. It's insane.
Okay.
It's insane.
How did you get turned on to it?
Some friends of mine were playing it. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'll look at it. And then I looked at it and I was hooked.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, it's got cats in it. So there's an immediate.
There's just all these adorable little cats and their butts.
And now, but it is animated, though. It's not like real
cats.
Yeah,
they're all little cartoon cats.
Yeah, little cartoon cats.
Right. And then there's these special ones that show up, like Guy Fury.
Oh. And now, does he look like the idiot on the
No, he's
Food
just
Network?
A little cat, and he is, I guess, standing in a way that Guy Fieri stands,
like an idiot, like a douchebag.
Yeah,
okay.
And he has a little chef hat. And there's Joe DiMaggio.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
And who else?
Didn't you say there was?
Oh, there's a Chairman Meow.
Now I don't know, for people who don't know this or not, the lovely Amy Guth, her cat.
She had a cat. Yeah,
she had a cat named Chairman Meow.
Yes.
I think just passed away last year.
Yes, I believe
so. Yeah.
But yeah, there's a bunch of, it's essentially you collect them just to look at them.
Okay.
Because you don't even see them doing anything.
You
can't even virtually pet them.
If they made a movie out of Angry Birds, do you think they'll make a movie out of this?
I don't think so, because it's just cats being cats.
They'll find a way.
Like, I mean, I know there's that one movie that's coming out, The Life of Animals or something like that.
That's the secret life of pets.
Right. So, I mean, I think they got it covered with that.
Yeah. That actually looks really funny.
Right. Well, they all have personalities.
It looks really. I like have you seen the trailer for it?
I've seen it.
How about that? The fat cat who eats like an entire turkey? Did you?
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, you gotta see it. It's like this 400-pound cat that devours an entire turkey.
Which there is a big fat cat in this game.
Of course,
Tubbs.
There is. Tubbs.
Yeah. Usually you see him and he's sitting next to the food thing and he just has crumbs on his belly.
Oh, and that's it. He's just like by the food. Does he have a partner named Crockett?
He should. Oh, my gosh. They should do that.
They should.
Adorable.
You got tubs in there. You need to crock it.
Oh, my gosh. And he wears a little jacket.
And he can wear like a sports jacket and no socks. They can put shoes on him, but no socks.
That would be too cute.
Well, the Angry Birds movie made $39 million over the weekend. I did not get a chance to see it. Jim said it was not good. Number two, Captain America Civil War with $33.1 million, bringing its total up to an extraordinary $347 million since its release. And worldwide, it's at $1 billion. It's at $1 billion. and Dan, you loved it, right?
I did.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Great.
Number three, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, seriously, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Almost $22 million. Number four, The Nice Guys. You a fan of Esmeralda? You got to be a fan of Ryan Gosling, right?
No, he's great.
Yeah.
Have you seen that thing where they they're doing like a therapy session, and it's Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe, and Ryan Gosling comes in and Russell Crowe's just sitting amongst all this like paraphernalia that's with Ryan Gosling's face with like the Hey Girl.
Oh yeah.
Kind of thing, and I don't know, it's just weird, but Ryan Gosling keeps screaming a lot.
Yeah.
He's like, it's not my fault, but like this high pitched scream.
Oh, I have to see this.
It's I don't know why I'm so, like, it cracks me up every time.
Well, I mean, you got to see, you haven't seen the movie, have you?
I haven't.
No, you got to see it.
I want to.
It's great. And they are phenomenal together. And you know, I saw them, they did talk shows together and separately promoting the movie over the past few weeks. And when they were on shows together, it was hysterical. They're really, really funny together. So, yeah, I liked it. It only made $11.2 million, but I think it's very, very funny. And any movie where Ryan Gosling does like a Lou Costello impression, I'm like, okay, all right, I'll buy that. Here's a guy. Ryan Gosling is doing a tribute to Abbott and Costello in this 2016 violent crime noir comedy. And he's channeling Lou Costello. I was just like, this guy's a genius. Number five, The Jungle Book, $11 million. Another movie, you know, anything basically with Disney on it is making money. That's essentially all. I mean, whatever Disney's releasing this year is insane because they've got the damn Alice in Wonderland movie coming out on Friday. And that thing is going to make a trillion dollars. And then they follow that up with the sequel to Finding Nemo. And they've got it. Oh, yeah. And in November, they've got a little Star Wars movie coming out. Like, what are we? Dan, did you get your Disney stock?
Unfortunately, I did not.
I think we should just get the stock right now. I'm sure we wouldn't make. We should have gotten it when they were releasing No Deposit, No Return in the 70s. That would have been the time to get the Disney stock. Boy, you guys did not grow up in that era, man. You know, people my age, 50, 51 in their 50s, the 70s, there's nothing more horrifying than the term in the 70s, live-action Disney movies. Nothing more horrifying. They were so bad. And they all played at the Will Rogers Theater on the northwest side of Chicago. Belmont and Central, Will Rogers Theater. Every couple of weeks, there'd be a new terrible 70s live-action Disney movie. Like, Phil Silvers was in a lot of them. And
do you mean like Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Yeah, but not even that good.
What's the one with the fish?
With the fish.
He's a little fish. Guy from...
You mean Mr. Limpet.
There you go.
That's not a Disney movie.
Oh, no? Okay.
No, that was just a great Don Knotts movie. I grew up watching that movie. I love that movie. Yeah, I love that. And The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. Don Knotts, oh, man, great movie. Great movie. Yeah, The Incredible Mr. Limpet, I love that movie. Oh, my God, it was one of my favorite movies when I was a little kid. But, no, these movies were terrible. There was, like, Gus, which was the field goal kicking donkey. That was one of them. No Deposit, No Return. I don't even know. There were, like, and they all had the same people in them, too. Like, I mentioned Phil Silvers is in, like, six of them. I'm trying to remember who else. Dean Jones was in a lot of them. That Kurt Russell started out in those when he was a kid. When he was a kid, he was like the strongest man in the world where he like drank some concoction and was able to lift cars over his head and stuff. It was that kind of crap. They started in the 60s. The live-action Disney movie started in the 60s with those, you know, those Kurt Russell live-action wacky comedies. And then they went through the 70s, and I don't remember. I'm going to have to look them up. Maybe we can look them up. Dan, if you can, like, maybe look up live-action Disney movies of the 70s. I don't know if that's too specific a search. But it was a thing, man. It was a thing. Gus. You don't remember Gus, the field goal kicking mule? You don't remember? That was a box office smash.
You should do a whole festival.
Of just the live action Disney movies?
Well, that, and then you can throw in the dog movies.
Like what? Like Air Bud?
Yeah, there you go. There's a few of those.
Yeah, there were like four Air Buds. What was the one with what's his face from Friends was in with the chimp that could play baseball?
Ed.
That's right. That was his big, remember? That was like, okay, Matt LeBlanc's going to be a big star. He's starting to make movies now. And then he makes Ed about a baseball playing chimp.
Whoa, Air Bud has done volleyball.
Air Bud's all over the place.
Baseball, basketball.
Yeah. He's no longer just Air Bud.
Oh, and he's Air Buddies?
He's Sports Bud, because he does all sports.
Soccer, World Pup.
World Pup is what it's called?
An Air Bud Golden Receiver.
Yeah. All right. We have to break here for weather and traffic, and we'll come back. I'll finish up the box office, and we're going to start talking about video game movies, movies that were based on video games, and now they're making movies about apps. And perhaps they'll make a movie starring Chubbs or Tubbs and Crockett. Yeah. Hi. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. I'm your overnight guy here till 5 a.m. My dad will be calling in about an hour because it's a jokey time. I'm finishing up the box office here, and then we're going to jump into movies about video games or based on video games because we got to get into that because Angry Birds, the movie, was your big box office winner. And, Dan, you did find a list of some of the fantastic live-action Disney movies from the 70s.
They sound intriguing.
Oh, my God. So bad. You know, they didn't make a lot of animated movies at that time, Disney. They were doing, you know, really crummy live-action movies about field goal-kicking donkeys. That's like that's the kind of crap they were doing. Oh, man. Anyway, real quick, let me finish off the box office here. Number six, Money Monster, $7 million, bringing its two-week total to $27 million. Number seven, The Darkness, $2.3 million. Number eight, it just won't leave the top ten. It won't leave the top ten. Zootopia, another Disney movie. It's unstoppable. This thing is a force of nature, Zootopia. Number nine, The Huntsman, Winter's War, which is made $1.1 million, bringing its total up to $46 million. And then number 10 is Mother's Day, bringing its total up to $31 million. But the big winner was the Angry Birds movie with $39 million over the weekend. Now, I told you about this before, Esmeralda, when we were talking about it, that they're going to make a movie out of Tetris.
Right.
Now, I don't know how, you know.
I couldn't tell you either.
I mean, because Tetris doesn't have, like, a story. Because Angry Birds, at least, there were characters and there was somewhat of a story and the pigs laughed at you. This is just a bunch of bricks falling.
Yeah. And I don't even think I've ever seen a Tetris game where there is some sort of storyline. It's always just, that's it. They're just blocks.
Yeah, you got to move things around until they fit. And it always came, it was free with your Game Boy. Like, if you got the Game Boy, Tetris was free. Since being created in a Soviet computer lab by Alexei Pajnetov in 1984, the block puzzle game Tetris has sold over 170 million copies across multiple platforms and cost fans countless hours of playtime. But Threshold Global Studios is hoping that you can spare some more time for Tetris the movie. According to Deadline, the team behind the Chinese-American partnership is taking the final steps to secure the $80 million in funding to realize a live-action film adaptation of the game, which requires users to flip and maneuver puzzle pieces so that they make and then erase one continuous line. While addictive, there appears to be no story to speak of. That doesn't seem to faze producer Larry Kazanoff, who helped usher the 1990s fighting game Mortal Kombat to the theaters. And It's not what you think, he told Deadline of the sci-fi trilogy. It will be a cool surprise. The big version, a big screen version of Tetris joins the recently announced adaptation of Atari favorites Missile Command and Centipede as projects looking to capitalize on video game nostalgia. The former's distinctive pieces also made a cameo in 2015's Adam Sandler film Pixels. Well, we all remember how good that was. So Centipede and Missile Command are also on the docket. And there was no storyline for, and I mean, I guess you could make something out of Missile Command, but Centipede is just, it's a centipede. So, all right. I don't know. What do you guys think of this? 312-981-7200. And I have a list of best video games and worst video game movies of all time. Tetris, a puzzle that they seem to think they're going to be able to make a movie out of. All right, here are some of the Disney live action movies. Okay, these I'm not kidding, and I probably saw all of these. Let's see, The Boatniks. Yes, I've seen The Boatniks. The Barefoot Executive. That's a Kurt Russell, a chimpanzee movie. How about this one, The Million Dollar Duck? There was Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Now You See Him, Now You Don't, another Kurt Russell movie where he drinks a formula that makes him invisible. There was a lot of formula drinking with Kurt Russell, a lot of science experiments. The Snowball Express, The World's Greatest Athlete, again, another Kurt Russell. Charlie and the Angel, One Little Indian, Herbie Rides Again, which was a sequel to The Love Bug. The Castaway Cowboy, The Island at the Top of the World, The Strongest Man in the World, again, Kurt Russell drinks formula and can lift cars up over his head. Escape to Witch Mountain, that was a big one. Escape to Witch Mountain was a big one. That had Kim Richards in it. Kim Richards, who is now on I'm Crazy, I'm a Wife, and in Beverly Hills. Because I'm crazy. The Apple Dumpling Gang. If I remember correctly, that was another Don Knotts Disney movie. It was like Don Knotts and maybe Bill Bixby. How about One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing? These are real. I'm not making this up, man. Then, of course, No Deposit, No Return, which was one of the most popular of all of them. My friend Scott Oaken, who likes to bust chairs at Brian Adams shows, remembers vividly going to see the Will Rogers, and there were lines around the block and people sitting in the aisles. He still maintains it's more popular than Gone with the Wind. No Deposit, No Return. Gus, the aforementioned Gus. Oh, here's a good one. The Shaggy D.A. You guys remember The Shaggy D.A.? That was where Dean Jones turns into a dog, but he's a D.A. It was a sequel to The Shaggy Dog.
Wait, was he still practicing?
Yeah. He was a Shaggy D.A. He was
he talking?
Yeah, he was talking, and he was like a dog.
But could people hear him talk?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Oh.
He was the Shaggy D.A. Freaky Friday. You got to remember Freaky Friday. Jodie Foster, Barbara Harris, they switch personalities, and then they remade that with the Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis, which, by the way, is a terrific movie. The Littlest Horse Thieves, Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo. Pete's Dragon, by the way, being remade and released later this year with Robert Redford. Nice look, Dan.
What is Robert Redford doing in that?
I don't know. Candle Shoe was another one. Return from Witch Mountain. See, they went back. Kim Richards was in that. Oh, yeah, The Cat from Outer Space was another one. Hot Lead and Cold Feet. That was another Don Knotts. That was a Western, wacky Western.
Thought he was getting married, and a gunfight broke out.
Yeah. It's a shotgun wedding.
North Avenue. That was very good, see? The North Avenue Irregulars.
That about just irregular t-shirts?
I remember it. Yeah, I remember seeing
colon
it
from that commercial.
The Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again. The Unidentified Flying Oddball. And then, of course, The Black Hole. Now, The Black Hole, that was a big deal. I remember that one. It wasn't good, but it was a big deal. All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with video game movies and more on 720 WGN. News is up next.